Up in the sky, look!
It's a bird!
It's a plane! It's Superman!
And welcome to Make DC DC. I'm Brett Davis, and I'm here with DC Pearson. How's it going?
Hi, everybody. Not too bad. How about you?
Oh, it's been a little rough. But thank you for tuning in to this podcast, our first episode. Of course, this show, as you know, we go through every DC film ever made. We were just going to do the DC Universe films, like the Justice League kind of movies. But the Flash one that came out made everything canon. So now we're starting with 1951's Superman and the Mole Men. Are you excited to start this journey?
I'm thrilled. And yeah, we're like you said, we're just picking up the gauntlet that they threw down, you know.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you don't want to miss any references in future films and stuff. So I'm glad that you're signing up for this. Now, were you?
Exactly. I mean, I was watching this, you know, notebook in hand. Because yes. If we want to understand where we're going, we have to understand where we've been.
Exactly. Were you familiar with the character of Superman as a kid?
I was familiar with Superman. Yeah, I was pretty, I would say, steeped in Superman stuff. I feel like my, you know, obviously the Christopher Reeve movie was on TV a lot, so I would watch that fairly frequently. Mm-hmm. The death of Superman was like a big sort of kind of cash in, like a comics arc that they did in DC Comics to try to make it. Was like when they finally realized that like grownups were buying comics because they were nostalgic for them as, you know, things from their youth. And then also they were becoming collector's items. So I think it was one of the first times that they really embraced, like, we're trying to make a comic book that people will view as a collector's item. And I totally bought into that. I got a ton of the surrounding sort of titles around like Superman dying and then also being reborn in four different forms. I watched Adventures of Lois and Clark, the new Adventures of Superman, which was I didn't realize it at the time. I just thought as a kid, it's like a Superman show, but it was really like a nighttime soap if it starred Superman. I was all that to say was pretty deep into it from a fairly early age.
Okay. Now, have you, of course, you're an actor. Have you ever acted in anything DC Comics related?
I have never acted in anything DC Comics related. I've honestly, I've been in one Marvel film. I was in Captain America 2, The Winter Soldier. But I've never acted in anything DC related. There was briefly a flurry. By this, I mean like three tweets of somebody being like, oh, you should be on that Peacemaker show. And mm-hmm. so somebody like tagged James Gunn and was like, he should be on the Peacemaker. And I was just, I don't even remember what the impetus of that was, but as somebody that I liked that, the, what is it called? Suicide Squad, like especially the, not so much the first one, but the second one that James Gunn did. I enjoyed that.
Yeah.
I like Steve Agee is on that show. So I just like working. So I was like, hey, if this is going to be a thing, sure, that'd be great. So I was like,
I don't know if you have and I mean this in the nicest way, I don't know if you have the physique to play Peacemaker.
Oh yeah, no, not to be him. That role was already well cast and John Cena had already appeared in one film as the Peacemaker and also the TV show. So no, I think just to, I don't even know if there was a character that they were attaching me to, or they just thought that my sort of brand of self-deprecating / too smart for the room humor would be a fit. I don't know.
Well, we'll be getting the Peacemaker in about 90 episodes. So we'll talk about that when we get to it. This is the first feature film based on any DC Comics. It was essentially a pilot for the TV show, The Adventures of Superman, the TV show. I'm getting ahead of myself. This was sort of a pilot, but it also came out as like a B movie in theaters. He's not the first Superman to appear on the big screen. Much before George Reeves, there was Kirk Allen played him in movie serials that were, you know, just short things that you'd see before another picture in between newsreels and stuff. But yeah, this is George Reeves, aka George Kiefer Brewer. His first film role was in Gone with the Wind, and he acted alongside James Cagney and Ronald Reagan, as well as appearing as Superman on I Love Lucy. What did you think of George Reeves' take on this character?
He looks big, I'll say that, like, especially next to Lois Lane, like, he really looks very tall. And he does kind of, if you've ever seen any really early Superman comic books, like, he does just kind of have a, like, that's a big guy, not so much in the way that we currently think of it, like a super chiseled guy with zero water intake, but just a guy that's a sort of, he's just a block of guy. Stop. And yeah, and he embodies that as well. I always had thought of him as like you hear about George Reeves, and kind of the standing joke about him is it's like, oh, he was like not in that great of shape. It never would like hold up to today's sort of standards of super jacked, you know, guys in these action movies and superhero movies in general. So I was aware of that, but I was definitely like, oh, I mean, he looks just like kind of big. He's like a big guy. And then I'm realizing I think I'm conflating what I was imagining George Reeves actually looking like with that sort of famous footage, slow motion footage of like a guy getting hit with a cannonball in the stomach. Mm-hmm. And he didn't look like that. No. He just looked like a pretty normal guy. And then once he would be next to other male performers, I was like, okay, either everybody in this is really big or George Reeves isn't that big. But, you know, I think he's just a normal guy ultimately.
Yeah. And he did, you know, reprise the role as Superman in the 2023 film, The Flash.
Yeah. Right. Thanks to the technology that's going to make it so that ultimately there aren't any performers anymore, because they're just like, we can have anybody that you liked that is no longer alive or is not able to perform this role in this way, we can just like click drag them into our movie.
Exactly. Yeah. Adam West is in it too. And of course, Ezra Miller, one of our greatest performers. And then also we have Phyllis Coates. She just died 2 months ago.
Oh, wow.
She plays Lois Lane.
She was terrific, I thought.
Yeah, I was like, oh, yeah, this is, I see more of like the Lois Lane character that still exists to this day than like the Superman character, which kind of has different, you know, takes. Like, she's just as brassy and as bold as, you know, any other depiction I've seen of her.
Yeah, I liked that she was sort of in her like elite bubble. Like, she was very much like she's the big city gal, and she's like, well, at least we can say she's there in, we should say, I guess we're getting ahead of ourselves, but like, this thing takes place entirely in just like the smallest, dustiest town ever. Yeah. And she's very over it from the beginning. And I did appreciate that, and I was like, oh, there's a lot here shining through that, as you said, is like still in the DNA today, which speaks to our choice to start here.
That's right. And you know, I'd be remiss to not mention Lee Sholem, the director, also known as Rollem Sholem, known for his Speedy productions. This movie was filmed in 12 days and it shows.
Yep, absolutely. It is, there is not a lot happening, and man, that camera is planted.
Yeah, they put it in, and I feel like we come back to scenes and the camera is still in the same spot it was before.
Big time. Or a lot of just like, okay, we're not getting ahead of ourselves to say there's mole men because it's in the title of it, yeah. But there's a lot of just like, okay, there's these two mole men that are just sort of wandering slowly through the dustiest desert landscape that feels like they just drove up to like Santa Clarita or something and then planted the camera, and they're like, okay, go from right to left. Mm-hmm. That'll be in the first third of the movie. Now walk back left to right. That'll be in like the last third of the movie. Like, there a lot of it feels very samey.
Yeah. So let's jump into this story. Spoiler, the first 10 minutes of this thing is entirely about oil drilling.
That's not an exaggeration. No. I couldn't believe it. I kept checking the runtime. to be like, when are they? It was a true like Milhouse, when are they going to get to the fireworks factory moment, where it's just like, when is the Superman of it all going to happen?
Yeah, they're talking a lot about how fantastic this fake oil rig is.
And we're to believe that, we should say, like, that's not to say that we don't meet Clark and Lois right away. Like, they're pretty much within the first 2 minutes. There's like some, a guy's like, hey, break down that oil rig. And everybody's like, but it's the biggest oil rig ever. And he's like, you hear what I say? Do it. And then they pull up. And so they're introduced very quickly. And we're to believe that. And some of this is like not believable, I think, in any case, but also some of it just speaks to like how the institution of journalism has degraded so much, where it's like, we're to believe that two big city reporters have been dispatched to rural Texas to cover the just a big oil well, and that that's going to be like a huge story.
Yeah. This takes place in Silsbee, Texas, I believe. The home of the world's strongest man, Mark Henry, among other things.
Is it a real town?
Yeah.
Wow. Huh.
But, you know, Texas is a big place. Maybe they just picked a name and it happened to exist. But yeah, Clark Kent and Lois Lane arrive. They are learning about this oil drill. We got Bill Corrigan, and he's saying, well, we actually have to shut this down. And Lois seems disappointed. And then Clark's like, wait, this could be a story. And the PR guy is upset about it. If there was ever a movie that makes a blunt case for diversity in film,
yeah,
it could be this one. Because you just meet so many white men, all like a degree off of like what their opinions about things are.
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, they're all but they make this little town, you know, go there. And they all have kind of just like stock guy in old movie sort of like, oh heck, well I would never do that, you know, just sort of like chagrined.
Yeah,
like they don't really want to do their job, but also they don't want to get fired. Yeah, completely.
There's an old man who's like, hey, did you bring the oranges I asked for? It's like, you sure? I sure did. It's like, we know that guy loves oranges.
And the old man's name is Pop.
Pop, yeah.
And then Corrigan, I think, like, kind of yells at Pop. And then he's like, oh, gee, I'm sorry. I was, like, sore at you. Like, it just, and this is all, and you're just like, this is a Superman thing. Like, what am I watching? Yeah,
you're getting to meet these guys a lot more than, it, like, feels like a procedural. Like,
yes.
Like, this is, like, episode 200 of Superman.
Right.
Not your
first
these characters.
Yes, it's they invested in them to a degree where you're like, this show was gonna take place in Silsbee. They were like, him and Metropolis, that's not enough of a fish out of water. We gotta see him in Texas for the whole run of the series.
So yeah, Lois is pissed. They go to the hotel and they say, hey, let's go back to the quarry. Because I got excited. I was like, great, we're gonna learn more about oil drilling.
I thought it was starting over, I have to say. Like, I thought I had accidentally clicked back to the beginning of the thing, because the shot of them driving down to the oil well is the same one that from when they showed up the first time, and them getting out of the car looked exactly the same. And maybe it was
like the
same.
Brightness was like pulled down a few notches.
Yes, yes, day for night.
Then we meet these weird little guys, the Mole Men. How would you describe the Mole Men?
I would describe the Mole Men as, looking like they are either being portrayed by little people or by children, and having, makeup that makes them look like Wallace Shawn, basically. Like, that's part of what makes me think that maybe they, at least one of them, is played by an actual child, because otherwise you could just cast a man of small stature who has this hair pattern, because they literally just have like male pattern baldness hair.
Yeah.
And that's, and kind of bushy eyebrows. And that's pretty much the extent of their fantasticness.
Yeah. So, they start looking around. Lois and Clark, go back, look into the well some more, and then find the old man. And he's surrounded by fruit. His oranges have fallen to the ground along with him. And Lois stays back while Clark phones for help, and she sees the mole men peeking in.
Were you getting X-Files a little bit from this?
A little bit, yeah. Like they're kind of back and forth is very Mulder and Scully.
And because Lois is also skeptical, like Clark is, or I think Clark is like, but how did those oranges get on the ground then if all he did was have a heart attack? And she's like, you're being ridiculous. You just want to see foul play or something where there isn't any. And yeah, I was getting a little proto Mulder and Scully here. I'll be honest with you.
Okay. She describes the mole men. She says they had the bodies of moles and great big human heads. Which I will say, no. They just look like smaller people. Well, you know, wearing like, you know, a bodysuit, I guess.
Right. Yeah.
Just their heads are kind of tall. Mm-hmm. Like you added an extra Wallace Shawn head on top of Wallace Shawn.
Yes. Yeah, there's a little bit of actual, but not to this degree, like when Clint Howard played a character in Star Trek, like when he was an actual kid.
Yeah. Yes, that is a very apt. If you've never seen that, look up Clint Howard's Star Trek. It's very bizarre. But I'll say these mole men are also pretty bizarre. They always seem to be making this noise, like, eh. They're always like in fear and kind of like cowering while also being curious and inquisitive.
Mm-hmm.
We're 15 minutes in and no Superman.
Nope.
Sheriff comes around. He doesn't believe Lois. But Bill Corrigan says, Kent, you're a newspaper man. You want a story? Well, I'll give you one so big you won't even want to print it. And he shows.
Which, that, yeah, I mean, that makes sense. News people who work in the press are famously gun-shy about printing big stories.
Yeah. He finds some test tubes that glow, which I'm guessing means that whatever they were drilling into was radioactive.
Yeah, if you like somebody giving you different like numbers of like substrata of the earth, like if you can differentiate between like what 1750 feet down and like 2000 feet down would mean, you're going to love particularly this scene where he's like, and then I took this sample from this one. And then like he's just placing test tubes and Clark is like on board. He is acting like he completely understands what all this means.
I mean, I guess the oil business was bigger back then. You know, maybe they're like, look, we got to get this oil stuff right or else we'll look like fools.
This is when Daniel Plainview was viewed as like a folk hero. People were like, we know about him and we think he's great.
Now imagine Superman versus Daniel Plainview.
Oh, Brett, come on. There will be, I don't know, what is his blood? Just normal blood, I think, but it's Kryptonian. I don't know.
Yeah. Well,
there will be kryptonite. He's drilling for kryptonite.
Mm-hmm. And you know, Superman's pretty strong, but how is he against a bowling pin?
That's right. Yeah. I'd like to see it. And just grim, just sort of grim, like determination.
Yes. The mole men reemerge. They discover flowers. They like it. They see a snake. They don't like it. Then they see a nice little girl who's playing with a ball, and they crawl in, and a spooky version of Mary Had a Little Lamb plays.
Yep.
It's nice to know that was like a trend back then.
Oh, like how trailers now, every trailer has to have like a slow version of like a pop hit, but it's like spooky.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm thinking of the Avengers one, and I'm going to try not to mention any Marvel properties on this show, but
okay. Yeah, that's not what we're doing here.
Strings doom to hold me down, doom doom to make me fret.
My favorite instance of this recently is we watch a lot of I think it's on Peacock, where there's like some movie that like 5 or 10 years ago would have come out in theaters, but now is going to be like a Peacock original, and it's called. It's confusing because it's called like Finest Kind or something. And it stars Tommy Lee Jones and Ben Foster. And it's a like dead, like kind of like fisherman, gruff fisherman turn crime thing. and it's probably a movie I would watch and enjoy, but then completely inexplicably, they were like, well, we have to have one of those trailers where it has like a pop song that is like a spooky version. And they chose to use New Sensation by NXS, which just couldn't make any less sense when you see just like Tommy Lee Jones, Ben Foster, just tons of grime and like oil from like fishing on their faces. And then a like spooky version of NXS is playing. It just doesn't track whatsoever. We're speaking of drilling. We are hitting the bottom of that well for sure.
Yeah. 25 minutes in, he finally turns into Superman. The mom had come in and screamed, and an angry mob formed. Clark tries to calm everybody down. It does not work. So Superman comes in, conveniently calms everyone down.
You feel the degree to which they just like, they were like, we don't really know how to make superhero movies yet, but we do know how to make Westerns. So how do we make this as close to a Western as possible?
Very Western. In fact, one of the mob members calls the guys little critters. I found funny.
Yeah, nobody uses the V word. Nobody says varmint that I can recall, but
yeah,
they left money on the table there.
And another guy calls his gun Old Betsy. Like, oh, better watch out when they got Old Betsy. So yeah, there's three particular rabble rousers, I'd say.
Mm-hmm.
And they really want to lynch these mole men. I wish there was an allegory there.
And we're not, and yeah, Brett's also not like, like they literally say the word lynch mob at one point. Like it's very, very, very clear. Like all the stuff that they're like playing with is very clear.
Yeah. But they never quite connect it.
No.
When I looked it up, it said it had more to do with the Red Scare than the,
right.
I don't know, lynchings. But yeah, so the mole men are kind of running across this barrier of some sort, and they hide by planking. You remember that?
I do that. Speaking of New Sensation, the Old Sensation from 2012. Yeah.
Yeah. It was like a Vine trend.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems to work, because then they're like, well, where'd they go? And like, we as an audience can see them perfectly clear. Then Superman shows up, and he's like, you better watch out. First, they're radioactive. Second, they mean you no harm. And then he just gets shot by the guy. The guy just pulls on Superman.
Yeah, with really no provocation. Like, Superman is not physically threatening him in any way. He just doesn't like what he's saying.
Yeah, he's like, they're radioactive. Don't shoot at them. And he shoots Superman. But of course, he's Superman, so he just goes, ha, 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 and it bounces off of him. They do manage to hit one of the mole men. Superman saves him.
And if you ever lamented CGI in a movie, like if you're like, oh, CGI looks so fake, like you have to watch this, because this sequence will make you appreciate some just like the Scorpion King grade CGI and its ability to help storytelling.
Yeah, he flies up and just turns into a cartoon character. Which, you know, could have been worse.
I thought, absolutely.
That's not so bad.
It's charming. It's extremely charming.
Yeah. Then the other mole man runs from these guys for about 10 minutes.
It's so long.
This is where I hit the 1.5 speed on my viewing.
If you've ever just looked, been driving in like California, Arizona, anywhere in the Southwest, and you've just looked off to the side of the road into like an expanse of nothingness, just imagine one of these little mole men just running across that for forever.
Yeah. The mole men looked so scared.
They really did.
They did.
I think the mole men were well acted.
Yeah. They wind up trapping this guy in a shed and set it on fire. The mob then runs to the sheriff.
They knew what special effects they could do. They burnt the shit out of that shed.
Yeah, absolutely.
If you go on a studio tour looking for that shed, you're not going to find it. There's like minutes of this shed just burning so hard.
I mean, that's their big set piece, really.
And you also keep expecting, like, okay, you're like, the Mole Man is trapped in the shed. What's going to happen? It just literally could not feel more like the setup for Superman to save someone. Like, it would be that in a sketch. But then it just keeps going and going. And then the Mole Man finally finds a plank that is loose. And then he just sneaks out of his own accord.
Yeah. I mean, he's a crawler, you know?
Mm-hmm. That's right. Yeah. Moles crawl.
Yeah, so the leader of the lynch mob winds up punching out the sheriff. Lois shows up. They've got the Mole Man in the hospital. The doctor's marveling at how the Mole Man has the body of a man.
I like that. Yeah, it wouldn't have cost them anything to be like, his biology was so different from ours. I can't believe I was able to save him. There'll be so much to learn. But instead, they're like, nope, he's pretty much a guy.
Clark at one point says to Lois, I brought him in. I mean, Superman brought him in. So, you know, there have been better versions of that in future Superman projects than him just being like, yes, I did the thing. Oh, I mean, Superman
did
the thing. We get a lot of this lynch mob. Clark tries to talk to them, then he disappears, and then Superman comes back. Just starts slowly beating them up, taking away their guns. Some more Mole Men arrive. This time they have a laser. I looked up what this laser was. It's an Electrolux vacuum cleaner with shoulder braces and a steel funnel added to the front.
And it looks it. There is a sort of charming steampunky quality to their little laser machine that they pull out of the ground. It truly looks like steam powered. Would have been in like the Tim Burton Willy Wonka,
very like space age too, just like mm-hmm. 1950s B movie thing.
Yes,
for sure. You know, I think that was one of the things, I'm watching this and I'm like, the things I've seen from this era the most are maybe like Twilight Zone episodes.
Sure.
And this feels like it could be a Twilight Zone episode, but they never really make a strong point about anything.
No. I think like I did appreciate the sort of like, again, what little I know about early Superman, where like, I think he like fought the KKK at one point, or they like, that was part of a whole like outing of when the KKK was getting really big, was like Superman talked about them in the comics and was like, these guys are losers or whatever. Like, I did kind of like the social justice Superman who's like, in a vacuum, it's like, yeah, you do want to see him fight a giant like robot or alien or something that like has powers that are a match for his own. But there's kind of something charming about seeing him being like, no, he's going to defend this one little like helpless Mole Man, because also he's an alien and maybe he like relates to that on some level. And then his antagonists are just going to be like idiot human demagogues who just don't know any better. Like, he has a moment, Superman has a moment when he's confronting the lynch mob where he tells like the lynch mob leader, like, you're the kind of man that makes it hard for other men to understand each other or whatever. Like, there's a very that was the closest it came. I felt like it wasn't completely successful in the way that Twilight Zone can be, but I did appreciate kind of the ham-handed ness of that. Like, I like that Superman. I like the truth, justice, and American way stuff. I'm a sucker for that.
I dig it too, but it felt very like Star Trek instead of Star Wars, you know? Like,
right. Yes.
I don't think people are tuning in to see Superman like calmly de-escalate situations.
No, not in the slightest, but I think they're just like, that's all we know how to do.
He goes in to retrieve the shot injured Mole Man, and then while he's away, one of the lynchers tries to sneak up on him, and they just shoot their laser at him. Doesn't seem to do much. Kind of like pushes him against a wall, but they shoot him for a good like minute, and then Superman stands in front of it. I don't know what they were thinking this was going to look like, but they really let it breathe.
It kind of looks like Superman is having like flaming marshmallows thrown at him or something.
Yeah. And then he saves the lyncher, and he says, you deserve to die, or something like that. And then he brings them back to their hole, and they go away, but not before blowing up the oil rig.
And then Lois has like a concluding thought.
Yeah.
Where she's like, well, I guess their message is leave us alone and we'll leave you, or like you live your lives, we'll live ours, or whatever. Like, it feels like there was a lot of import put on that line, but it didn't feel like it necessarily stood up to being the last thing in the thing.
It's literally the last thing she says, and it fades into a the end card.
It's also just like, in a, like, I guess it's like, that's the, you would just think it would be like, wow, that's so amazing. What's under there? What's the deal with them? And their whole thing is just like, don't worry about it. We'll never find out. We don't know. Like, it's not going to be a thing.
Yeah. We never even like go down there.
No. They allude to it. They're like, they could have a whole, the guy says before he's even seen any mole men, the mining guy, when he's showing Clark Kent the samples, is like, there could be a whole civilization down there. It's like, slow down, dude. Like, you just found some glowing rocks.
Mole men were, that was the thing growing up. I remember learning about mole people and being like, I don't know what this is.
What was the context of you learning about them?
I don't even, probably The Simpsons.
Sure.
Hans Mole Man.
The idea of
that there's another race underneath us that is maybe nefarious in some way, and we'd never know. Yeah, there was a 1956 film called The Mole People.
Okay.
And a 1961 movie called Mole Men Against the Son of Hercules.
Whoa. Okay,
seems
so
like
a pretty popular antagonist.
Movies. The Mole Men are fighting the Son of Hercules.
it's like the B team from both the heroes and the villains.
Yeah. So that ends our review. What did DC see in this?
DC liked? Yeah, I liked things about it. It was charming. Like, it was just sort of a charming exploration of people not yet ready to invent a genre. Like, you think about how long it takes before you get the actual Superman movie that sort of has defined a lot about what we know about modern superhero movies, but then even further through like the Tim Burton Batmans and all that stuff. And then, you know, today's sort of like modern superhero era, like it's just so far away from them knowing what to do with this. Like, they know it's really popular, but they just don't have the technology to really pull it off yet. And they just don't know what it is. They just don't know how to do it in this format, I feel like. And it also makes a lot of sense that it was really just a backdoor TV pilot, which I did see on Wikipedia was cut up into two episodes on TV. So it's like, oh great, I have to wait an entire week to find out what happens in the second half of this. Is that Mole Man going to make it all the way across that field?
Yeah. They did smartly leave this to the end of the season.
Oh, that's good. So this is the thrilling two-part finale.
Yeah, if you didn't see this in the theaters, you know, this wasn't your first, wasn't the general public's first introduction. The first one was just an origin story. Unbelievable.
That makes sense.
Why didn't they make that the movie, though?
Yeah, that's wild, especially if you think like, oh, people are going to go see it in theaters, and for some of them, this is going to be their introduction to the character. I think they're going to think that Superman is predominantly just a like nosy journalist who aspires to be a private detective that then like, oh, by the way, sometimes he will like pretty much just jump across town.
Yeah.
And be bulletproof.
So I did not like this movie, but I found it watchable once it was going 1.5 speed. So that is my review. But this is about your journey, DC.
Yeah, and I think this is an auspicious start. I think this sets a really, 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 I don't want to say low bar, because obviously some of this just like, it's on the evolutionary chart of superhero movies. It's a paramecium, you know. Mm-hmm. And we're now on, in terms of superhero movies, on, I don't know, something on the other end of the evolutionary chart that's really big and different.
So yeah, we've got so many more movies to watch. Unless you just want to stop.
Yeah, what do you think?
Yeah, we could stop.
All right. Fuck it.
I've seen a bunch of these already, so.
Yeah. I feel made DC already, you know?
Yeah.
Like, yeah, if the goal is to make DC, I sort of feel like I'm pretty me, you know?
Yeah. And, you know, we got all the characters like Bill Corrigan and Pop. So, you know, when they pop up,
we've hit the big ones that people want to see.
Yeah. I will get so excited if I'm ever watching a Superman movie and someone's casually named Bill Corrigan. I'm going to be like, oh, I know that.
It did feel like the kind of thing like that you would see that somebody would do. Like, you would watch a YouTube video essay and then somebody would be like, actually, did you realize that this latest Superman, there's like five giant that completely bites like superhero, the Superman and the Mole Men. Like, that is going to happen. And we called it.
Yeah. Well, thank you for going on this journey, which is now over. This is the final episode of Make DC DC. And it's been a wild ride.
Thank you for having me, Brett. I appreciate it. I think, you know, some of the best journeys are ones that can be concluded almost immediately. And even half of that very, very short journey can be done on 1.5 speed.
Yeah. And that's, you know, that's a tip for future episodes of Best Show Patreon podcasts.
What's up?
Thank you so much.